Hello, it is time to read from the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, October 16th, 2021. My name is John Reef, and I'll be bringing you the news today. Here's a look at what we will be reading. We'll start with the weather, and then the mini editorial on the front page, and then to the top of the front page for more stories. Then to the inside pages for more stories of local interest. At the 20-minute mark, we'll do the opinion page and letters to the editor. At the 30-minute mark, we'll do the obituaries, followed by sports and more feature stories as time allows, wrapping up with Dear Abby. Forecast for today, plenty of sunshine, a high of 65 degrees today, and winds out of the west at 7 to 14 miles per hour. Clear and cold tonight, low down to 34 degrees, winds west at 3 to 6 miles per hour. And warm, plenty of sunshine on Sunday, a high of 73 degrees, and winds south-southeast at 4 to 8 miles per hour. Sunday night's low of 41 degrees under mostly clear skies and sunshine on Monday. Breezy in the afternoon, a high of 74 degrees, winds south-southeast at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Mostly clear skies on Monday night, low of 48, and then comfortable. Lots of sunshine on Tuesday, a high of 71 degrees, winds south 7 to 14. On Tuesday night, clear skies, low of 45, and then it's going to cool off and get cloudy and a couple of showers on Wednesday. A high of 57 is all for Wednesday's high, and winds northwest at 10 to 20 miles per hour. Taking a look at the mini editorial for today, this is by Doug Furlich, or Furlich, that's F-U-R-L-I-C-H, of Laurel, Nebraska. Doug Furlich, or Furlich, writes, White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain agreed the economic problems Americans are facing today, inflation, supply chains, etc., are high-class problems. I would guess because only high-class folks like Mr. Klain will be able to afford food, gas, paper goods, etc. in Biden's America with inflation at a 13-year high. Getting that from Doug Furlich, or Furlich, of Laurel, Nebraska. Top of the top page, abortion law heading to SUPCO, or Supreme Court. Texas law has banned most abortions since September. The Biden administration said Friday it will turn next to the U.S. Supreme Court in another attempt to halt a Texas law that has banned most abortions since September. The move comes as the Texas clinics are running out of avenues to stop the GOP-engineered law that bans abortions once cardiac activity is detected, which is usually around 6 weeks. It amounts to the nation's biggest curb to abortion in nearly 50 years and makes no exception for cases of rape or incest. By going to the Supreme Court, the Justice Department is taking the route that clinics have sought as other legal challenges have failed. In the meantime, Texas women have turned to abortion clinics in neighboring states, some driving hours through the middle of the night and including patients as young as 12 years old. People are scared, confused, and other than very early abortion, they have nowhere to turn to access safe, legal abortion unless they are able to travel hundreds of miles to another state, said Jeffrey Hans, president of Planned Parenthood South Texas, whose clinics have stopped offering all abortion services since the law took effect September 1st. The latest defeat for clinics came Thursday night when a federal appeals panel in New Orleans, in a 2-1 decision, allowed the restrictions to remain in place for a third time in the last several weeks alone. Justice Department spokesman Anthony Coley said the federal government will now ask the Supreme Court to reverse the decision, but did not say how quickly. The court already once allowed the restrictions to take effect, but did so without ruling on the law's constitutionality. The Texas Attorney General's office called Thursday night's decision by the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals a, quote, testament that we are on the right side of the law and life, end quote. A 1992 decision by the Supreme Court prevented states from banning abortion before viability, the point at which a fetus can survive outside the womb around 24 weeks of pregnancy. But Texas law has outmaneuvered courts so far because it offloads enforcement to private citizens. Anyone who brings a successful lawsuit against an abortion provider for violating the law is entitled to claim at least $10,000 in damages, which the Biden administration says amounts to a bounty. only once as a court moved to put the restrictions on hold, and that order stood for just 48 hours. During that brief window, some Texas clinics rushed to perform abortions on patients past 6 weeks, but many more appointments were canceled after the Fifth Circuit moved to swiftly reinstate the restrictions last week. Texas had roughly 24 abortion clinics before the law took effect, and operators have said some may be forced to close if the restrictions stay in place for much longer. Texas Right to Life, the state's largest anti-abortion group, set up a tip line to receive allegations against abortion providers, but has not filed any lawsuits. Kimberly Schwartz, a spokeswoman, said Thursday the group expected the Biden administration to go to the Supreme Court next and was, quote, confident Texas will ultimately defeat these attacks on our life-saving efforts, end quote. Already, the stakes are high in the coming months over the future of abortion rights in the U.S. In December, the new conservative majority on the Supreme Court will hear Mississippi's bid to overturn the landmark Roe v. Wade decision that guarantees a woman's right to an abortion. On Wednesday, 18 state attorneys general from mostly GOP-controlled states threw new support behind the Texas law, urging the court to let the restrictions stand while accusing the federal government of overstepping and bringing the challenge in the first place. Last month, more than 20 other states, mostly run by Democrats, had urged the lower court to throw out the law. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has called the law clearly unconstitutional and warned that it could become a model elsewhere in the country unless it's struck down. Next story on the front page, it's a big picture. It's cornhole players in Sioux City. And the big picture says a bag tossed by Frank Huser of Apen, Wisconsin, lands in the hole during an American Cornhole Organization tournament Friday at the Tyson Event Center in Sioux City. The cornhole tournament continues Saturday. And again, cornhole players in Sioux City, the ACO Midwest Tournament this weekend at Tyson, this by Earl Horlick and Dateline Sioux City. Some of the top cornhole players from 12 states will be vying for bragging rights and for more than $5,000 in winnings during the 17th American Cornhole Organization, or ACO, Midwest Conference Tournament at the Tyson Event Center, 401 Gordon Drive. The tournament, which began Friday, will continue at 9 a.m. Saturday. The teams, including the Sioux City Major Cornhole Team, will be vying for points needed to qualify for the ACO World Championships, which will be held July 25th through the 30th, 2022, in Branson, Missouri. Cornhole is a popular lawn game that is also called sack toss, beanbag toss, or even bags for short. Established in 2005, ACO is the official world governing body for the sport. Tyson Event Center General Manager Tim Savona said he is happy that the ACO is making its first trip to Sioux City. The enthusiasm for the game and professional sport of cornhole continue to build around the country, he said. We look forward to sharing in that enthusiasm with new and familiar faces in Sioux City. And then again, that is the cornhole tournament continuing today at the American Cornhole Organization Midwest Tournament at the Tyson Event Center. Next story on the top page, COVID-19 cases drop in Woodbury County. This by Dave Driesen, Dateline Sioux City. New COVID-19 infections continued to fall last week in Woodbury County, hitting the lowest level in over a month. The county reported 442 positive cases for the week beginning September 27th, down from 525 the prior week, according to the latest weekly report released by Siouxland District Health. The 14-day positivity rate also ticked down from 16% to 15.7%. The number of people in Sioux City's two hospitals with COVID also fell sharply from 42 during the week of September 20th to 33 last week. Last week's new positive cases were the fewest since the 303 reported for the week of August 30th. In more recent weeks, the high peaked at 541 new cases for the week starting September 13th. Siouxland District Health officials had attributed much of the spike to the highly contagious Delta variant of the virus, which now appears to be waning. Despite repeated public calls to get shots, More than half of Woodbury County residents remain unvaccinated, according to state figures. As of the week of September 27th, 45.5% of county residents had completed the single or two-dose vaccinations, little changed from the previous week. Last story on the front page, Waters focused on city's momentum. Council candidate is proud of city projects. This is about this series. Today, the Journal concludes a series of stories focusing on the four candidates for three open seats on the Sioux City Council in the November 2nd general election. Today is Alex Waters. This is by Dolly Butts and Dateline Sioux City. Alex Waters hopes voters decide to give him another term on the Sioux City Council so that he can continue to be a part of the, quote, tremendous momentum, end quote, that he said the city has experienced over the last 4 years. During a recent interview at the Journal, Waters cited several projects as being among those he is most proud to have been a part of. The Oracle Aviation Center, a new flight school coming to Sioux Gateway Airport, a biogas project at the wastewater treatment plant, which Waters said will generate nearly $2 million in annual revenue for the city, and the Reinvestment District, a combination of four projects which allowed the city to leverage a combined $13.5 million in future hotel and sales taxes generated in the downtown district. We've done a lot over the last 4 years, a lot of things that I think we should be proud and excited about, Waters said. I want to continue some of the things that we have teed up right now and just be a part of the action. I think that it is a citizen's responsibility to try to make the biggest impact they can on the community around them. I see this as an opportunity to impact a community that has made such a tremendous impact on my life. The 35-year-old, who works as Director of Talent and Community Engagement at Morningside University, sees his even-keeled nature, approachableness, and active participation in the community as qualities that make him a good representative for the residents of Sioux City. Waters is vying for one of three seats on the five-member council in the November 2nd general election, along with fellow incumbent Dan Moore and first-time candidates Ike Rayford and Matthew O'Kane. I think that it's easy to be overcritical of yourself when you have a difficult vote. I try for the most part to really think with an open mind and gather as much information from constituents as well as experts before going into it and making a decision, Waters said. Waters, who is seeking his second full term on the council, was appointed by the council in February 2017 to fill the remaining 10 months of former Councilman Keith Radig's term. Then, in the 2017 election, Waters cruised to victory. Looking back on his time on the council, Waters wishes the city could have brought the former Howard Johnson Hotel, now known as the Sioux City Hotel and Conference Center, bought the former Howard Johnson's Hotel, now known as the Sioux City Hotel and Conference Center, and used the site as part of the reinvestment district rather than building a new hotel. But the fact of the matter is, every time we went to that property, it was at a price point that we couldn't work with, so we weren't able to buy that, he said. I think about that a lot, and I wish we would have. I'm hopeful for that to be developed in the future because I think there's a real opportunity that an investor wants to capitalize on the momentum that we're experiencing. Waters said continuing to invest in the city's infrastructure and be a good steward of taxpayer dollars will be among his top priorities if voters decide to return him to office. We really need to continue to lean into our infrastructure and invest in our infrastructure. It's something I hear all the time. Potholes, potholes, potholes. We need to work on it, he said. The fact of the matter is that we're filling a tremendous amount of potholes. We have a road crew that's working all the time on trying to address those issues. Waters noted that the city has reduced its tax levy by an average of 3.5% annually over the last 3 years. We need to make sure that we're not raising taxes if it's not needed, and we're not lowering that if the money is needed elsewhere, he said. I think continuing to watch and balance the budget is really important. Continuing to invest in quality of life amenities is important to retain residents as well as attract visitors, according to Waters. He played a role in the formation of the new Sioux City Regional Convention and Visitors Bureau, the SCRCVB, which recruits new events and promotes Sioux City as a destination for tourists, conventions, and sporting events. Sioux City Mayor Bob Scott has openly chided Waters during council meetings about the SCRCVB's progress. Scott was the only council member to vote against a letter of understanding authorizing payments totaling $200,000 to the SCRCVB on October 1st of 2021 and 2022. Scott said he didn't want to bind next year's council to $100,000. "It's something that I've been really thankful that the council has been behind. It's something that I am extraordinarily passionate about," Waters said of the SCRCVB. "I think if a community isn't telling their story, if they're not talking about the incredible things that they have going on in their community, then who is? We have to be able to shape that narrative and talk about all of the great things that we have going on in our community." In an inset graph, it shows about Waters. He's 35 years of age. His hometown is Milford, Iowa, but he has lived in Sioux City since 2012. His education is a bachelor's degree from Morningside University in political science / global history, a master's degree from Creighton University in negotiation and dispute resolution. And his occupation, he is the director of talent and community engagement at Morningside University. It shows an inset picture on the front page of Alex Waters, the Sioux City City Council candidate, talking during an interview at the Sioux City Journal's offices in Sioux City on October 5th of 2021. Moving now to page A2, man pleads not guilty to federal charges, this by Nick Heitrich, Dateline Sioux City. A Bronson, Iowa man accused of using homemade chloroform to abduct his ex-girlfriend has pleaded not guilty to federal charges. Zach Smith, 21, entered his plea October 8th in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to charges of kidnapping and interstate violation of a protection order. Smith was arrested and charged with hiding for 3 hours in the South Sioux City woman's vehicle on June 3rd. When she got in and after she had dropped a friend off at school, Smith threatened her with an airsoft pistol and forced her into his vehicle, where he blindfolded her, bound her with zip ties and duct tape, and rendered her unconscious with homemade chloroform. The victim told investigators that she awakened alone in a shed at Smith's home in rural Bronson, and was able to remove rope and duct tape from her ankles and escape. She was found at a rural Woodbury County intersection by a family member who was looking for her. Investigators found Smith in possession of a backpack containing condoms, lubrication, rope ties, and duct tape. Smith told investigators he had used items in the backpack during the abduction and had been planning the kidnapping for more than 2 weeks. He said he planned to keep her for a week, but did not know what he would do with her after that. Smith was initially charged in Woodbury County District Court, but those charges were dismissed after he was indicted in federal court. District Associate Judge Todd Hensley had issued a no-contact order against Smith on May 12th after Smith was arrested and charged in Woodbury County with 2 misdemeanor accounts of false imprisonment for an incident in which Smith lured his ex-girlfriend to an apartment. When she arrived with a friend, Smith locked the door and would not let them leave. Smith pleaded guilty to the 2 charges on October 4th. According to court documents, he will be sentenced to 75 days in jail and credited for time he spent in custody since his June arrest. Checking briefs now, 185th to perform flyover at Iowa-Purdue game Saturday. A U.S. Air Force KC-135 and crew from the Iowa Air National Guard's 185th Air Refueling Wing will perform a flyover at Iowa City's Kinnick Stadium Saturday. The flyover will take place during the Iowa Hawkeyes pregame activities before their match against the Purdue Boilermakers, according to an announcement provided by the 185th. The 185th refueling aircraft is scheduled to fly over Kinnick just prior to kickoff at around 2:30 p.m. Saturday. The Hawkeyes are ranked 2nd nationally in an Associated Press poll this week, having won all 6 games so far this season. Purdue has a 3-2 record. The Boilermakers' offense has scored a combined 26 points over the last 2 games. The game will be televised on ABC. Next story, teen charged in shooting pleads not guilty. A Sioux City teenager has pleaded not guilty to charges in connection with a downtown Sioux City shooting. Aaron Word, 17, entered his written plea Friday in Woodbury County District Court to attempted murder, willful injury, intimidation with a weapon, going armed with intent, and trafficking in stolen firearms. His trial was scheduled for December 7th. Word is accused of shooting a man who was attempting to break up an attack on his sister during a September 24th altercation in the 200 block of Nebraska Street. According to court documents, Word was among people in a car with Miracle Walls and Joy Scott following another woman with whom they had an ongoing feud. They blocked her path on an access road, and Scott and Walls opened the woman's car door and assaulted her. Before the woman was stopped, she had called her brother, who arrived on the scene and tried to break up the fight before he was shot. Walls, 23, and Scott, 39, both of Sioux City, have both pleaded not guilty of second-degree burglary. Last story in the briefs, a man pleads guilty to selling meth. A Sioux City man has pleaded guilty to selling methamphetamine. Matthew Sandoval, 28, entered his plea Tuesday in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Sandoval conspired with others from 2016 through June to sell more than 500 grams of meth. He faces a mandatory minimum sentence of 10 years in prison and a possible maximum sentence of life in prison. A sentencing date has not yet been set. Moving now to the opinion page, today's letter is local. It's why you should vote for me for city council. Once again, it's from Alex Waters. And this is his letter. When I first asked voters, it's called Why You Should Vote for Me for City Council. When I first asked voters for their support, I knew that we were on the cusp of great change. And while COVID-19 may have tested our resolve, I am proud of our community, and it's difficult not to notice positive things happening. First, a little bit about myself. If you have met me at community events, and I try to attend almost everything, I hope you felt my excitement for our community. If you haven't met me, here's what you may notice. First, my enthusiasm for this community is undeniable. Our community needs cheerleaders to inspire entrepreneurs and investors to dream of what could be. I regularly brainstorm with city staff and citizens of what the future could look like and then formulate a plan to get us there. Secondly, I'm innovative. I'm not afraid to change processes or think differently about how we can solve a problem. I think government has become far too business as usual and needs to be challenged. Finally, I'm approachable. I engage in community functions because I want people to feel that they can come to me with their ideas or concerns. There are a number of projects I would love to tell you all about, but here are some of the things I would consider accomplishments over the last 4 years. The Reinvestment District Program transformed our downtown, leveraging $13.5 million state dollars into over $150 million of development. Projects included the Courtyard by Marriott, Convention Center upgrades, Warrior/Davidson Project, Ho-Chunk Virginia Square development, and the Expo Center. We filled over 170,000 potholes and resurfaced or reconstructed nearly 20 miles of city streets. Our renewable fuels project at the wastewater treatment plant captures a gas that normally would be burned off and put into a pipeline to be sold across the country. That program is looking at nearly $2 million of revenue annually. We lowered the tax levy 3 of the last 4 years by an average of 3.5% annually, showing a commitment to a balanced budget. A city internship program was developed and introduces college students to a range of careers, hopefully keeping some of them in Sioux City after graduation. A regional convention and visitors bureau was created so we can leverage all of the resources throughout the region to attract visitors and conferences/events to Siouxland. We built a record number of home and apartment complexes. And finally, our Parks and Rec department had numerous projects worth mentioning. Cone Park, the Expo Center, splash pads, new pickleball courts, Pearl Street Park, expansion of our trail system, and the redesigned riverfront that will be a showpiece for our community. Looking ahead, there are a number of priorities. Infrastructure. We must improve existing roads, sewer lines, water mains, and plan strategically for future growth. The American Rescue Plan allowed us to use federal dollars to meet some of these goals, but we must remain proactive. Taxpayer dollars. We must continue to invest in projects that improve our quality of life, grow our tax base, and present a return on investment. We need to watch for wasteful spending and opportunities for improvement. Finally, we need to continue to be collaborative. The city needs to aggressively cultivate partnerships in the community. Things such as our facade program revitalizes businesses and neighborhoods. Partnering with schools creates natural talent pipelines that can address workforce shortages. Finally, collaboration of the arena with Long Lines, the Expo Center, and the Tyson Event Center are welcoming record numbers of families to Sioux City. These types of things make sense, and if we communicate and collaborate, I'm convinced that the next 4 years will be even better. I hope you will vote for me, and together we can continue this momentum. And again, about Waters, Alex Waters, 35 years old from Milford, Iowa, who has lived in Sioux City since 2012. His bachelor degree was earned from Morningside University in political science and global history, master's degree from Creighton in negotiation and dispute resolution, and he is currently director of talent and community engagement at Morningside University. In a little inset, it talks about the city council election. Today, the Journal concludes a series of guest columns written by candidates for the Sioux City Council in the November 2nd general election. On Sunday, on the opinion page, the Journal will make its endorsements in the race, featuring four candidates for three open seats. Next, moving to some state news. Long way to go to reach 2025 broadband goal. This is by Rod Barsart, Dateline, Cedar Rapids. The latest surge of government aid to expand broadband access in Iowa is much needed, industry experts say, but the goal of universal coverage by 2025 remains formidable, with the most challenging underserved or unserved areas of the state yet to enjoy high-speed internet connections. Participants in the Cedar Rapids Gazette annual Iowa Ideas Conference this week said a new round of $200 million in federal American Rescue Plan Act funding being offered to Iowa providers comes as cities, counties, and state officials decide how to use more than $1.5 billion in infrastructure money that also can be applied to capital-intensive broadband projects. It's a great start, but there's still a long way to go, said Chris Hopp, general manager of Elkader-based Alpine Communications, which serves Clayton and Fayette counties. He was on an Iowa Ideas panel that included Dave Duncan, chief operating officer of the Iowa Communication Alliance, Kent Van Meter, vice president of client services for Fiber Utilities Group, which among other things manages the state's audiovisual Iowa communications network, and Kevin Cabbage, general manager and chief executive officer of the Farmers Mutual Telephone Company based in Stanton. It most definitely is not enough to solve this problem, but it's a great start, agreed Cabbage. There's been a tremendous amount of money awarded. Unfortunately, we've only just begun. Duncan, whose trade association represents about 115 locally owned and operated broadband providers across the state, said the state previously awarded nearly $100 million in grants in September, but had applications for about $300 million in projects costs, many in targeted, tiered service areas totaling nearly 86,000 locations across about 15,000 square miles in the hardest-to-serve places in Iowa. So we're talking about lots and lots of Iowans who still don't have access to future-proof broadband, Duncan said. Most of the Iowans who were cheapest and easiest to hook up to broadband have been, so we have left the most expensive people in the most sparsely populated areas, in the rocky areas, in the hilly areas, etc., and it's going to cost a lot of money to make sure we treat everybody equally and give them access to the best internet, he said. Cabbage noted that in his four-county area in rural southwest Iowa, it costs about $35,000 per mile for a fiber optics installation. Yet there might be only two houses on that one-mile stretch, so the cost per household is significant, and government grant or loan money usually doesn't cover the expense fully. We want people to have top-notch services, but it does come at a cost, especially in rural areas, to build and maintain these types of networks that everybody so desperately needs right now, he noted, especially to build future-proof capacity of 100 megabits per second download and upload speeds that can handle ongoing technology upgrades. An inset picture shows Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signing legislation into law during a ceremony at the Iowa State Capitol in Des Moines on April 28th of 2021. The legislation creates grant programs to expand broadband internet access to underserved areas of the state. It's time now to do the obituary, starting with Lamars, Iowa. Lois Weinkoff, W-I-N-E-C-O-F-F, Lois Weinkoff of Lamars, 97 years old, passed away Thursday, October 14th. Arrangements are pending with Mauer Johnson Funeral Home in Lamars. From Mapleton, Joe A. Thies, or Thies, T-H-I-E-S, Joe A. Thies, 80 years old, passed away Thursday, October 14th. Services will be October 20th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Ute. Burial will be after the service, St. Clair Township Cemetery in Ute. Visitation will be October 19th from 4 to 6 p.m. Armstrong Van Houten Funeral Home in Mapleton is handling the arrangements. From Hinton, Clark Lyman Johnson, 61, of Hinton, went to his eternal home on Wednesday, October 13th, after a brief battle with cancer. Services will be 11 a.m. on Monday at Hinton United Methodist Church in Hinton. Reverend Beth Oder and Chaplain Devon Comp will officiate. Burial will be at a later date in Hillside Cemetery in Merrill. Visitation with the family present will be from 3 to 7 p.m. on Sunday at Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. There will be a prayer service with memory sharing at 7 p.m. Visitation will resume from 10 a.m. until service time on Monday at the church. Arrangements are with the Rex Winkle Funeral Home in Lamars. Expressions of sympathy can be extended to the family through rexwinklefh.com. Clark was born March 22, 1960, in Lamars to Gerald and Joan Clark Johnson. He was their second child and oldest son. He grew up on a family farm just south of Merrill, Iowa, with his sister Kim and his brother Mitchell. He was united in marriage to Mary Beth Baylius on February 23, 1982. To this union, two daughters were born, Bridget and Megan. Their marriage dissolved in 1991. In 1992, he and Andy met and blended their lives and families together in Sergeant Bluff. He was married to Andrea Marie Engel on April 17, 1998. In 2001, they built their dream farm on the north hill of Hinton, or in the hill north of Hinton. He attended Hinton School and graduated in 1978. After graduating from Western Iowa Tech, he went to work for Hayes Order Buyers. He then worked at the Heinhold Hog Market at the Sioux City Stockyards until he and a business partner opened Sioux Valley Hog Market. They sold their company to Weichmann Pig Company, and Clark continued working for Weichmann as the general manager. Being outside, sun or snow, is how Clark liked to enjoy family time. Whether boating on the river, snow skiing in the mountains, riding horses, or relaxing in the pool, he sure loved when the family got together. Going on trips to Florida with his wife Andy during the winters was a high point of those cold months. They also enjoyed trail riding in the Black Hills with friends in the summer. Clark remained busy on the family farm alongside his parents and brother raising cattle. Clark enjoyed working cattle on the nights and weekends. He would often take his grandkids on the side-by-side out to the pasture to check his cattle. He instilled his love of agriculture and a strong work ethic in his children. He taught Bridget and Megan to show livestock, have responsibility for their cattle and sheep, and hauled them around the tri-state area to show their animals. Clark provided Brandon lots of hands-on learning on the farm, selling posts and fixing fence. Lacey had the opportunity as well whenever she got in a bit of trouble. He helped Lacey learn to drive. This particularly came in handy when Clark would annually forget Andy's birthday or their anniversary and would send Lacey to go do his shopping. Clark will always be remembered for the love he shared with his eight grandkids and the joy they brought him. He always made homemade ice cream for each of their birthdays and spoiled them as much as possible. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made in Clark's name to the Plymouth County Fair. And the final one for today from Cocoa Beach, Florida, formerly Sioux City, Russell Robert Snyder. Russell Robert Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, passed away at the age of 68 on Tuesday, October 12th. Services will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday at Daniel's Family Wyoming Chapel in Albuquerque, New Mexico. The definition of Russ was one of a kind, son, brother, father, grandfather, husband, friend, mentor, teacher, giver, learner, boss, construction master, concrete god, problem solver, company owner, junkyard king, collector, barbecue master, traveler, ultralight flyer, fisherman, political thinker, great American inventor, creator, storytelling legend, who never complained. Truly one of a kind. If you were lucky enough to meet Russ, you'd know he was rough around the edges and ornery as hell, but once you got to know him, you'd find out quickly he had the biggest heart of anyone. He always said not to make a fuss when he died and, quote, just dig a hole, put me in a box, and bury me, end quote. Well, a fuss is being made. He spent his whole life taking care of everyone else, and now his loved ones get to brag about him as much as they want. He hated to be recognized and given any attention, but it doesn't matter this time. He was a legend of construction and never stopped teaching. This guy loved concrete and everything about it. If he had it his way, everything would be made of concrete. He couldn't help himself. He wanted to make everyone and everything around him better. And he always knew when it was a special occasion because he'd show up wearing his fluorescent yellow safety shirt. One thing about Russ is he loved being around people he cared about. His family always came first in everything he did. He was raised in Sioux City and spent a lot of his time growing up with his grandpa Stokes, working in the junkyard and helping to haul houses around the Missouri River in the winter. He founded Snyder Construction, which now has nearly 100 employees. He was born into a loving family and died knowing that he was loved by everyone. He wasn't capable of being mean. Russ would always care for you and look out for you in his own way. He left behind a ton of memories and literally too many accomplishments to mention. Maybe if he would have done less, they all could have been mentioned. Well, Dad, this is goodbye for a short time. We love you and we'll see you on the other side. Enjoy your last road trip. Thanks for being the best dad ever. Moving now to the sports section. It's the biggest game. DV faces West Central in Class A title match. This by Shane Lance at Dateline North Sioux City. On Saturday morning in Sioux Falls, the Dakota Valley High School girls soccer team will play the biggest game of its life. At 11 a.m. at Howard Wood Field, the Panthers will battle number one West Central, or 11-1-1, for South Dakota High School soccer's ultimate prize, a state championship. It will not be an easy task for Dakota Valley against the Trojans, who were last year's state runner-up and have already beaten the Panthers twice this year by identical 1-0 scores. In both games, they scored in the last 8 minutes, Dakota Valley coach Jesse Castillo said. They're a very patient team, and we know how they play. They have very good attackers, and their goalkeeper is excellent. They have the experience, and it's going to be a challenge for us. We know that. The Panthers come into the game fresh off a pair of exciting postseason victories. In the state quarterfinals, Dakota Valley beat Groton 1-0 and then snagged a thrilling overtime victory against T in the state semis. In that match, the two teams battled to a scoreless tie in regulation, which sent the game to penalty kicks. Dakota Valley goalkeeper Ivy Winkler, the state's Class A leader in saves, kept the Panthers alive with a crucial save and then immediately sent them over the top by kicking the game's clinching goal. It was a sweet moment for the Panthers' group of seniors who were eighth graders when the program first came into being back in 2017. After battling through the tough start for the program, where Dakota Valley didn't win a single game for its first two seasons, the Panthers' eldest players go into Saturday's game knowing that it will be their last time putting on the Dakota Valley uniform. Now that they've gotten to this point, the Panthers don't plan to let the opportunity slip away. It's really important for us to work as hard as we can to go through and get the win, even if we don't, Winkler said. It's just important that we're there and we've made it that far. It is super bittersweet because I'm super excited that we made it this far, but it's also, shoot, it's my last game no matter what. The Panthers' underdog status makes the process of getting ready for a championship game even more fun for Castillo, as the pressure is all on West Central headed into the Saturday's matchup. Prior to this season, Dakota Valley has never won more than 5 games in a season. Before 2021, the Panthers' most successful season to date came in 2020 when they went 5-5-3, losing to Sioux Falls Christian in the first round of the playoffs. West Central, on the other hand, is trying to win its fifth state title in the past 6 years. Now, Castillo said, Dakota Valley is a team to be feared. They know it, and I've heard it from several coaches that the team they wanted to avoid during this time was Dakota Valley, Castillo said. Just because we may not be a team full of soccer players, but we're a tough team to beat, especially with Ivy. According to his star goalie, Castillo had been hard at work making sure that the nerves leading up to the game don't get the best of his team. Whenever we talk about it, we start to get more and more nervous, Winkler said. Whenever he hears us talking about it, he shuts us up for a little bit and makes us calm down, play some fun games rather than just working super hard. As long as we're all together, we kind of just calm down. While he is doing what he can to keep the distractions away, the Panthers head coach knows that there will be some butterflies headed up to game time in Sioux Falls. It comes with the territory of fighting for a title. It would suck for us to work this hard and get to the game and then collapse. There's no room for that, Castillo said. You can tell they are starting to get a little nervous, but it's just part of it. It's the big game. It's the biggest game of their life. Shows two inset pictures on the front page. Dakota Valley girls soccer head coach Jesse Castillo instructing his players during a team practice in North Sioux City on Wednesday, August 16th. And at the top of the page in the big inset picture, Grace Bass practicing with the Dakota Valley soccer team at Dakota Valley High School in North Sioux City on October 7th. Next story, a young rivalry returns. BCU hopes to control pace of the game. This by Zach James, Dateline Sioux City. For the 19th time, the Morningside University and Briarcliff University football teams will meet in a rivalry game. This time it's at Memorial Field as the third-ranked Mustangs and Chargers meet in a 1 p.m. battle. The Mustangs have won all 18 meetings, and Coach Steve Ryan remembered when the rivalry started nearly three decades ago. The two schools decided to play for a saddle and called a rivalry Battle for the Saddle, which is fitting since both mascots have equine backgrounds. I don't know how it affects Briarcliff, but it gets our guys fired up, Ryan said. We show the saddle around a little bit. In many ways, it's a young rivalry, but it's for sure a good one. Briarcliff coach Shane LaDodge says there was some buzz around practice and campus this week. We've had the mindset of, this is why you come to Briarcliff, LaDodge said. You want to play games like this. We're in one of the top conferences in the country and competing against some of the best teams. This will be a good measuring stick for us. Last week, Morningside running back Anthony Sims broke the single-game rushing touchdown record by scoring six in the emphatic win over Hastings. Sims scored five of those TDs in the first 30 minutes of the game. He also had 203 yards and became the third Mustangs running back to score 50 rushing TDs in a career. On Saturday, he might break the 3,000-yard mark for his career. He needs 61 yards to do just that. Records have been broken often again under Ryan's tenure, and he said that it doesn't get old. The old saying is that records are meant to be broken, and it's special, Ryan said. His teammates were pulling for him and excited for him. He really did have an amazing game. It's a true credit to the game and the way he prepares for the game. I've just been blessed to play with some outstanding players. I think that's part of what helps the running backs is good quarterbacks, good wide receivers, and good offensive linemen. The Mustangs are averaging 217.4 rushing yards per game, of course led by Sims. On the season, Sims has averaged 128.4 yards a game, and he has 17 touchdowns. Ryan Cole and Michael Miner have also surpassed the century mark in rushing yards this season. 11 different men have had at least one carry. I do think we are running the ball very well right now, and a lot of that has to do with how well the offensive line is playing, Ryan said. I think that the end of 2019 and in the spring of 2020 season, our offensive line played extremely well and played at a high level. I don't know if we're at that point yet, but we don't need to be. We've only played five games so far. Briarcliff knows the assignment. The Chargers are well aware how well they have to play in order to give the Mustangs a challenge. Coach Shane LaDodge said that has been discussed multiple times this week leading up to the rivalry game at home. He may not have told his fairly young squad that BCU has never beaten Morningside in 18 tries, but there's some excitement on campus among players, coaches, and students. We have to play pretty dang perfect, and there's nothing wrong with expecting that, Ladaj said. Our margin of error has to be razor thin. We have to take advantage of every opportunity. We can't let running backs bounce off tackles. We have to cover up the receivers because they're very explosive. Ladaj also said that if the Chargers defense Chargers defense makes Dolinchek uncomfortable, the BCU defense may keep its team in the game. Mount Marty did that during the first half when the Lancers came to town earlier this season. The Lancers forced Dolinchek to throw a pair of interceptions during the first half, but the Lancers offense really didn't do much with those takeaways. Of course, the Chargers D hopes to wreak some havoc. Linebackers Brent Tinker and Asisi Tupua have led the BCU defense so far. Tinker leads the Chargers with 40 tackles, a sack, and a fumble recovery. Tupua has 37 tackles and 3 sacks. Ladaj hopes the offense can take advantage of those chances as well as keeping their group on the field as long as possible. Ball control is a key that Ladaj knows is a crucial one. The rushing game will help keep the Chargers offense on the field. Asante Anglin, leads the BCU rushing attack with some 208 yards. If the offense does need to pass the football, quarterback Luke Davies will turn to Aaron Okoro, who leads BCU's receiving corps with 313 yards on 18 catches. Kobe Johnson isn't too far behind with 303 yards on 15 catches. The offense needs to stay on the field and sustain some drives, Ladaj said. Number 3 Morningside is at Briarcliff today, 1 p.m. at Memorial Field. You can hear it on the radio at KMNS, 6:20 a.m. Back to the front page of the sports section. Number 23, Wayne State, off to hot start. John McNamanen admitted there was a lot of anxiety as the Wayne State College football team took the field for the first time in over a year. The Wildcats' second-year coach wasn't sure how the Wildcats were going to play over a prolonged period of time, but those nerves have turned into excitement as WSC is now ranked after a 5-1 start. Wildcats are ranked 23rd in the AFCA Division II poll, and a key reason is 2 wins over top 25 teams. They've beaten 2 number 11 teams, Minnesota Duluth and Minnesota State, in a 3-week stretch. It's the first time since 2011 that the Wildcats are ranked. This week, the Wildcats, who are 5-1, get to show off that ranking against number 22 Augustana in a 1 p.m. home game in Wayne. Saturday's game marks the first time since 2010 that WSC and its opponent are ranked. Wayne State didn't play in 2020 due to the pandemic. Sure, the players practiced, but missing a year gave the Wildcats a chance to absorb their surroundings and not take playing football for granted. The chemistry has been great, and it's helped camaraderie more than anything, McManaman said. That sense of brotherhood has been good. Everyone was going through the same path together. That's been a huge part of it. The Wildcats opened the season against U Mary, and they won the game 34-27. He wondered which players were going to step up in the limelight and which might back down from the challenge. There were nerves, but after grinding out a gritty performance, McManaman, who was making his WSC debut, noticed how good the Wildcats could be. They all looked forward to playing, McManaman said. They had no doubts in their mind they were going to win that game. I was excited. My wife told me to enjoy that first game. I took that in. Defense has been a big reason why the Wildcats have won 5 of the 6 games. The Wildcats ranked 2nd in D2 in turnover margin at plus 16. The WSC defense has amassed 11 interceptions, tied for 3rd nationally. Those guys are opportunistic and they work their tails off, McManaman said. That's something that is preached a lot. They expect to make some plays, and I think that's what helps them. Defensively, freshman linebacker Alex Kowalczyk, this week's NSIE Defensive Player of the Week, he leads the Wildcats in tackles with 44 and is tied for 7th in tackles for loss. He has 7 tackles, good for 25 yards. Offensively, the Wildcats are 5th in the league in scoring offense at 35.7, but what they do well is in the red zone. The Wildcats have completed 20 out of 22 red zone opportunities, which leads all of Division II football. McManaman has coached teams where they get nervous inside the opposing 20-yard line, but not these Wildcats. The Wildcats savor those chances. When you're down there, you have to get points, McManaman said. When you get in the red zone, your eyes should light up. It's time to get your name in the paper. Redshirt freshman quarterback Nick Bone leads the Wildcat offense for 816 yards with 5 TDs and 1 interception. His efficiency rating of 162.1 ranks third in the NSIC. He's another one who never played a college football game, and he didn't really get to do anything with us until he got to fall camp, McManaman said. He's only going to get better and better the more he plays. Another local college football, the title is Dort hosts Dakota Wesleyan in GPAC football play. So we got Dakota Wesleyan at Dort, 1 p.m. Saturday today. The Defenders come into Saturday's game with one of the top offenses in the country. They have an average of 500 yards per game, and they're second in the nation with an average of 27.6 first downs per game. Defenders quarterback Tyler Reynolds has averaged 90.5 passing yards per game, and he had a breakout game last week against Mount Marty. When Reynolds isn't throwing the ball, he hands it off to Anthony Trojan, who has averaged 86.8 yards per game. He also has 5 touchdowns on the season. On the defensive side of the ball, Brayton Van Kickrix leads in total tackles with 34, 23, which are solo. The Tigers' offense have averaged 286.7 total yards per game with 163.5 coming through the air. Jamin Arend, has rushed for 74.3 yards per game, amassing 446 total. The Defenders should stay away from inside linebacker Cody Reichelt, as he had 60 total tackles and has 6 sacks for 36 yards. The Defenders beat the Tigers 47-10 last season. Dakota Wesleyan gave up 557 yards of total offense a year ago while collecting 298 yards totally at offense. Next, Northwestern at Jamestown. That's 1 p.m. today. This is the third of 4 consecutive road games that the Red Raiders are playing midway through the season. The Red Raiders were off last week but have a 6-0 record going into this week. The Red Raiders are 4-0 on the road so far this season. Northwestern has won 5 straight games against the Jimmies, including a 49-0 win last season. In fact, their last 4 wins have been by 28 points or more. The last time the Jimmies beat the Red Raiders came in 2000. And then Buena Vista at Nebraska Wesleyan, 1 p.m. today. The Beavers are seeking their 2nd win in program history over Nebraska Wesleyan. They've lost the last 3 games against the Prairie Wolves, including a 37-16 game in 2019 against Storm Lake. None of the American Rivers Conference teams played last fall due to the pandemic. The one win the Beavers have against the Prairie Wolves came in 2016 in a 38-31 win at home. BVU is 2-3 overall this season, scoring 198 points and allowing 201. The Beavers will surpass the 1,000-yard rushing mark this week as they have 963 going into Saturday's game. In the air, BVU has 1,291 yards. There have been 26 touchdowns scored this season by the Beavers. All right, it's time now for Dear Abby. The first letter from today is from Sick of Explaining. The title is Husband Resents Wife's Life Outside of Home. Dear Abby, I've been with my husband for 8 years, married for 1. Before our marriage, it was just the 2 of us doing everything together. He has a strong distrust of people and doesn't have any friends. We moved to a bigger city where I found a better job and made new friends. I go out with them occasionally, but when I do, he is very rude and snide to me. When I ask him why he's mad if I go out with my friends, he says, "It's always been me and you, no one else. We fight every time I go out. I'm tired of all of it. Do you have any advice for me?" Signed, Sick of Explaining. Dear Sick, yes, recognize that you married an antisocial, deeply insecure, and verbally abusive man. He views any relationship you have with someone other than him as a threat, so he's punishing you for it. Also recognize that his anger and his need to control you will only escalate. You may be sick of explaining, but your husband is sick, period. I'm advising you to make a discreet call to a national domestic violence hotline, 800-799-7233, because at some point you may need a safe escape plan. Next letter is from Cringing in Colorado. Dear Abby, I have been living with my boyfriend, a stalwart and loving partner, for 7 years. He proposed recently, and of course I said yes. My brother lives in a large city, and because I had attended their church, I asked him if we could be married there. Now he and his wife need to talk to us in person to assure the ministers that my fiance and I are evenly yoked and willing to make a public proclamation of our faith. My fiance is not religious. He's willing to do whatever it takes to make me happy and says he's willing to take the hit for me, but I can't stand the idea of seeing him uncomfortable on a day that should be a happy one. How can I back out of this situation without alienating my brother, who is the only immediate family I have left? Signed, Cringing in Colorado. Dear Cringing, thank your brother and his wife warmly for their willingness to help you and your fiancé, but explain that the two of you feel a smaller wedding would be more appropriate, so you have decided to elope. Many couples do this, and it shouldn't result in a family feud. And one more letter from Jay in Bennington, Vermont. Dear Abby, this is the time of year when the leaves begin to change into their fall colors. It is also when the media refers to the people who come to look at those colorful leaves as leaf peepers. I don't know how the term came about, but trust me, no one is walking around peeping like baby chicks. The correct term is leaf peekers. A teacher I once had explained it to our class this way. This is the time of year when the tourists arrive to take a peek at our leaves when the colors are at their peak. Just wanted to share, Abby. Jay in Bennington, Vermont. Dear Jay, live and learn. Thank you for explaining it to this dumb clock. Taking one last look at the weather for today. Plenty of sunshine, a high of 65, winds west at 7 to 14. Clear skies tonight, low down to 34, winds west at 3 to 6. Clear skies and sunny tomorrow, lots of sunshine, warm, a high of 73, winds south-southeast at 4 to 8 miles per hour. Tomorrow night's low of 41 degrees under clear skies and sunshine, breezy in the afternoon, maybe a cloud here and there on Monday, a high of 74 degrees. Mostly clear skies on Monday night, low 48. Sunshine on Tuesday, high of 71 degrees, wind south 7 to 14. Clouding up a bit maybe for Tuesday night, 45 for the low, and then Wednesday cooler, a couple of showers, and a high of 57, winds northwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour. That does it for the reading for the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, October 16th, 2021. For the last hour, the stories have been selected and read by me, John Reef. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions, you can call IRIS toll-free. You can call Tyrus toll-free, but that won't work. You can call IRIS toll-free at 877-404-4747. We thank you for listening to IRIS, your radio reading service.